Hi, welcome to Restoratively Yours, Belvedere Youth Club podcast series about restorative practice. I am Jenny Courtney, BYC's General Manager. We are a youth club based in Dublin in our city, and in 2019 we embarked on a journey to become a restorative hub in the community. Restorative practice, RP in short, is a philosophy and a set of practices focusing on building and maintaining good relationships and dealing with conflict in a healthy way when it occurs. For us, it has become the way we want to do everything. In this series, you will hear our story, the ups and the downs of our journey through different voices. Dorothy, our RP consultant, will guide you along the way. We hope it will be inspiring and enlightening.
Hello. In the following two episodes, we'll talk about the implementation process. So the first episode is a conversation with James Bowes, the RP coordinator, who led the process for the first 2 years. And in the following episode, you'll hear comments and feedback around the implementation from the board, managers and youth worker. Thank you very much, James, for agreeing to talk to me again. So we are recording this podcast 6 months already after you left the job. We had very long chats at the time, but I didn't record them. So I thought it was really, really meaningful to have your own voice to talk about the whole BYC process of becoming a restorative hub. So maybe please could you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yes, my name is James Bowles. I'm currently the senior youth manager in the DDLETB, which is the Dublin Dunleary Education Training Board. And I'm developing a programme called the ALP programme, which is the Alternative Learning Programme. And I hope to sort of look at that through a restorative lens as I develop further. I was the coordinator in the Belvedere Youth Club, and my task was to bring a youth club who was over 110 years old. I think it was 1918, I think it was developed, and so 105 years old. We're doing an excellent job, I'd say, in the community, but our board wanted to see if we could improve that, and we looked at the idea of using restorative practice to work alongside youth work and see what that would look like in that context. And I was given a 2-year term to do that, 18 months initially, but because of COVID, I got another 6 months to complete it. And I completed the 2 years in March of 2023. I do believe I didn't get there wasn't enough time to do all the implementation that I'd have hoped to have done in the organisation itself. So I left it with in the best hands I could possibly by developing champions, RP champions among the staff, and they've carried it since then. I'm unsure of how it's going today, but local reports, and still speaking to some of the staff that's there, they saying that's still sort of it's central to what they do, and it's really a strong part of what they do, and I'm really delighted to hear that.
It was quite a task, so when we had chats at the time, and when and through the work I did in documenting the process, I think you can correct me on that. I think your ways of implementing RP was quite organic. It was difficult because you started the job in the middle of COVID. And so having kind of a very clear plan was a challenge. And I think I could identify roughly three phases. So there was the first part, which was, around completing the design of the model, finalizing the strategy, and then there was the whole refurbishment of the building. And the creation of the restorative place. We've done a podcast already on that. And you started by training the staff and also give an introduction to all the board members and to review the policy and procedures. And then there was a second phase where actually the in-person work kind of resumed. And then it was about implementing RP process in with young people, with staff during meetings, check-ins, restorative conversations when it was necessary. Also trying to have a restorative element in all the activities that were led by the young people. Then you also did a lot of work in introducing the strategy, the ideas and restorative practice to all the different stakeholders around. And I think also we'll do a podcast on that. You've done a lot of work in making in recruitment and making the youth club being more diverse and inclusive. So that was kind of the main phase of hands-on work for you. And then I think at the last part of the time you were there, it was a bit about trying to improve the implementation. So there was this great idea of completing the training with trauma-informed care so that people understand why they were triggered and that they can help the young people regulate. So I think that really was a kind of a bit of a turning point for the staff and for the buy-in and for the implementation. And, you kept going with the committee of practice, the listening circles, the trying to model the processes for the staff, supporting the legacy, so training the champions, and there was more work done with young people. So actually, I should have mentioned that the training with young people was more maybe in the second phase, but then I think when you left, there was work done on the youth council and, to give the idea of empowering young people in making decisions. So do you think it's a fair description of the way you worked and the way you bounce from, one thing to another according to the needs?
Yeah, there are many questions in there, and I'll try and take them in stages. So if we sort of start with the fourth stage, I think on the fourth stage when I was interviewed for the job, I sort of came across interviewers, that had very like-minded to myself, that sort of had this vision of how they wanted to do things and how they wanted to improve the club, and that really attracted me. I'm a really, really strong believer in restorative practice because, I look at myself and I see how I've changed through using restorative practices and my family have changed over the years and my relationships have changed over the years by trying to be restorative. And I'm going to from the very get-go say this, I'm an ex-prisoner and I'm quite volatile. And I've made loads of mistakes. And even as a restorative practitioner, I sometimes go home and look in the mirror and say, how the hell can you call yourself a restorative practitioner? You know what I mean? Because sometimes I can get angry and stuff like that. Restorative practice has taught me that I err to be human. And I take these things in stride and it's a natural part of where I go from. But getting back to the conversation, we shared a vision. And I suppose going in and when I went in on a consultancy basis or going in as a manager was two different things. I suppose going in as a manager into a place like this and having a vision and sort of then you have to get everybody to buy into your vision, and that can be quite difficult depending on the organisation you go into. And we were going into an organisation who actually felt that they were doing a really good job and they'd survived for over 100 years doing what they're doing, which is sort of a Machiavellian approach to how we deal with young people. We'll build up, and it's part of the youth work sort of psyche and ethos. We build up a direct relationship with the young person and then we get reciprocation from that going forward. So the young person then, we do something for the young person then returns the favour. And I wanted to expand that because my belief was that yes, we have young people coming in, and yes, we build up really good relationships because relationships are really important. But it's also important that these young people understand that relationships are among them, their peers as well. And because a child has a different colour or has a different accent or, comes from a different area in the place, there should be no reason why we can't build a relationship up with them. And this was quite prevalent when we went into into Belvedere Force because it was indigenously white. So our board were of the same ilk. They were sort of saying, look, you know, we want to try and have full inclusivity, which, and that meant like everybody. And the Northeast Inner City, 51% of the Northeast Inner City, and this is from Pubbles, I've done a bit of research on that, are new residents. They're second generation from different countries, Irish. So the vision was this. So it was sort of like, so how do we, first of all, was how do we attract people in? And that was to sit down and say, like, what type of model do we need to use? What symbols are we going to use? How are we going to attract people to this organisation? Are we going to let people know that we're totally inclusive? And what's that going to look like from a raw perspective? So the idea then was like we had to sit back and design. And something that always stuck out to me was E equals MC squared, and it's probably the most known sort of thing in the world. So for me, it was BYC by RP squared. Because, like, you know, BYC as an organisation, we were just squaring it with restorative practice to the power of RP or RP squared. So the idea was that, like, BYC was a fantastic club, but when you give the power of RP to it, we are bringing it to a different level. So that's where that idea came. And we sort of, we ran that to the board, and the board loved it. And then we had to develop what sort of model are we going to use now? And I looked at all the models and spent weeks and weeks looking at the models, and we sort of, I tried to pull the best out of every one of them, and we designed the restorative relationship model. And after we like the board and ourselves sat down, there will be an advisory board on the RP advisory board, and we sat down, we unplugged, and there was a need from the board as well as to what they needed to do to measure stuff. And we'd have members of the board who'd be like quite academic, highly intelligent men and women, and like they had to have sort of purpose, and it's really difficult to try and argue with these and sort of say, look, that's not what we're doing, like it's because we're building relationships up here, and but we need the information. So there's a balance that you try and get, and trying to sort of sit between the balance and asking people to do extra work by filling in more forms and trying to appease the board can be quite difficult, you know what I mean? So that caused a difficulty. But in that context, we sort of, I quickly realised that, you know, although that sort of gathering of information was necessary, I also needed the people to gather the information for me, and I had to come to some sort of resolution around that, how we do that. And initially, we sort of started off saying, look, this has to be done, you have to do it, it's not a big deal. I actually added in times into their timetable to give them an hour to do all this type of stuff, sort of saying, we're adding in an hour, so you get an extra hour's break through it. We shortened the direct contact with the people so you could do it, but it still failed. So what we done was we sat down with it. We had to call a meeting of all the staff together. We sat down and we unpacked it and said, what would make it work for you? And they reduced it down to four questions rather than the amount of questions that they had originally in it. Then the next thing for me was the colours and the signage and what signage should say, and how we operated. And I had a little bit of an issue around, and I highlighted fairly early in the day because we were locking doors. And I just, I'm a prisoner, I'm an ex-prisoner, and I find locked doors are really sort of, they stop people from coming in. So the best I could do was I got them to make a sign over the locked door where the kids were coming in, but it said welcome in every language that we had in the Northeast Inner City. And so when mammies were dropping their children off, and our young people off, they'd look up and they'd say, and they go, oh. So I was trying to develop that sort of open and welcoming. And although we had this conversation and we were beaten by health and safety, our sort of management staff were sort of saying, look, health and safety comes first, the doors have to be locked. And in some contexts, yes, we have to take that in. But for me, it was sort of like, no, we need to have an open door approach, and an open door in such a way that, you know, any culture can come through and not feel like the door's locked against them. So that was the second one of the things that we sort of, I would have seen as a barrier, and I'd struggle from it through the restorative lens only. You know, do we accept the fact that health and safety is paramount? Of course I do. So in that context. So them ideas around, like, how do we do things? What do we do? And signage inside the building was really, really important for me, because we are trying to, the board had asked me to sort of create a restorative hub, and for me a restorative hub is a family centre. So in all family centres, or in any family you go into, there's photographs of us on the walls and places like that. So the idea was, let's photograph the young people, you know, let's open a space where we can add stuff to photographs as we go along, and then as they grow older, when they're coming back, they'll see themselves. And that's the generational thing, and for me that was really, really important that we understood this, but also to subliminally put our values and our restorative principles on the walls. So every day that the parents or the young people are coming in, they're seeing them, they're registering with them, and then they understand that this is what this is about. It's about being respectful, it's about being honest, it's about all the stuff that we spoke about in our thing. So that was phase one, as you said, and the building itself, most of that work had been done before I got there, and I was very fortunate in that. I just had to sort of do the interior design on the inside. I'm not an interior designer in any shape or form, but I did try my best, and we had experts in the field. But most of the ideas that we came up with was through us having consultation with the young people about what they wanted and with the staff about what they wanted. I wasn't a designer coming in and saying, here's what you're going to get done. It was more of a consultation then. We come up with ideas and we'd unpack them and say, look, how is it going to work? And like in one aspect, some of the work that was done, because I'd left and I've gone back to see it, and it wasn't what we envisaged, but it was what was given, and I'm sort of sorry that I wasn't there, because there should have been a lot more photographs. But anyhow, we're. So that was phase one for me. Then phase two was the training part. I just find, and I think it's a natural thing, is that, like, you know, when someone has trained and done something that sort of like, oh, we've done that before, so, you know, it doesn't work, so we're not going to try it again. And that for me can be really, really frustrating, you know what I mean? Because, you know, all my great sort of successes has been after 10 failures. Like, I mean, I didn't come in as the expert, as they sort of tried to sort of paint a picture of me, oh, he's the expert in restorative practice. I try to live restoratively, but I'm not an expert in restorative practice. Do I understand the philosophy behind it? I live the philosophy behind it, and I believe in the philosophy behind it. But I'd never see myself as an expert, because, as I said earlier on, I have a tendency to get angry, and that's part of who I am, and I work on that every day. But going in and sort of training, so we'd had training from, initially there'd been training done from within the NEIC. I think Emma Wheatley would have done a bit of training with the staff, and we'd had a couple of staff members. But, like, I just believe that, you know, if I'm trying to sell a product, if I'm trying to do something, then it's best that it comes from me, the training comes from me, and I express and I explain myself and I express and try and explain theories and get people to understand them, rather than just sort of this sort of, here's a sort of piece of literature I'll read and you should understand it. I want people to feel it, because that's for me is how restorative. So I'm quite passionate about how I deliver it, and the certain elements of it that I'll push on and sort of unpack with people, so that it creates a space where they know where the connections are, where look what we're trying to do. So I had to train, and quite successfully, because I had to train half them online, you know, so we missed that personal connection, which was a great loss. And I was at pains sort of I understood that, and I was at pains to sort of go to people afterwards when we were meeting them one-to-one and sort of saying to them, did you understand how that worked, and explaining to them, and constantly, and I reassured as much as I could to some of the staff. And a lot of staff actually, like, you know, in fairness, like they got it, but like, there was elements within the thing where they found really, really difficult to sort of buy into it, you know what I mean? And for whatever reason, you know what I mean? As I said, like, sometimes the Machiavellian sort of mentality is really strong within an organisation, and it works, you know. Let's be honest, like, if I have a young person there, and I'm, even though they're coming in, I'm their leader or I'm their youth worker, I'm in charge as far as that young person is concerned. So, like, what I wanted to try and do, and I think what the board was looking to do, was to empower these young people to challenge me and say to me, okay, you want me to do that? Why do you want me to do that? I don't feel like doing that today. And that's okay, you know what I mean? Like it's, for me, that's okay, and that's all part of how we should be sort of treating young people. Because, you know, if I'm an adult and someone comes to me and says, I want you to do that today, I want you to do cartwheels down the hall for me, I'm going to say, feck off, I'm not doing cartwheels. But we have this expectations on young people. I want you to go into the thing and play football. And 10 of them are good footballers, and 3 of them can kick snow off a roof. And every time they go in, they're being made a laugh of. But them 3 children should have the right to say, I don't want to go in. So we want, part of what I was trying to install and to sort of embed into the youth workers themselves was the right to choose, the right of a young person to make a choice. You know, and part of that was to be in a safe space where they could say, actually, Miss or whoever, youth leader, I don't want to do that today. I don't feel like that today. Maybe they had a bad day, maybe they're tired, whatever the reason is. So that, trying to change that mindset, because the Machiavellian way has a really, like, it's been working for a long, long time, and it works because of power dynamics. And that's the reality of things. And you know, and sometimes it's for convenience. You know, if I want to get 10 young people in a room and I don't want to really, you know, get involved in working with them in any sort of emotional way, then I get them a ball and let them run around, and I don't have to worry about them. I just stand there and blow a whistle. I'm not saying, for me, that's just, it's a different way of doing youth work. And that's not me sort of in any shape or form trying to sort of tell people how to do their work. That's if I'm sounding like that, I certainly apologise. I'm just saying that the idea behind what we were trying to do was to give young people a choice, and I'm trying to explain it in a way that hopefully people will understand. So that was a difficult process. And the buy-in for it was that we had some people who bought into it and thought, okay, we'll give it a try. Then you had the next level of some people who sort of, well, we tried that before, so I don't want to try it again. And then we had another level of, I'm not doing that at all because it's stupid. You know what I mean? I don't even like think I need to be in any way restorative, because like the way I've been doing things in here works. So I just go down and say to them, if you don't do what you're told, I'm going to tell your ma. And then they do what they're told. So, like, and we had them different mindsets, and then we, like, you know, we'd other mindsets in a way. It was sort of like, I don't feel emotions, which was staff members. I'd rather not getting in emotionally. So there's loads of issues around the staff themselves that needed to be looked at and addressed. And restorative practice didn't help in any way to sort of address them. So it meant that we had to start thinking outside the boxes to, how do we address these issues? How do we build relationships up with people that have agendas and don't want to, you know, to walk along? And if you're being undermined, how do we try and like show? So you try and live a process yourself by being restorative, but in some instances that meant that I had to do everything, and people stood by and watched and waited for me to fail. You know, and like, did I fail? I possibly failed a couple of times, and then that reassured them. Okay, that's the wrong way to do things, but if I'd have been supported through them, I think we'd have had better results. And I think in the long term, when people saying, because I don't give up, so I continued and I continued and I continued, even though I failed. And then people sort of, out of empathy for me, sort of rolled in behind me and said, okay, I'll help you. You know what I mean? And they helped, and then they seen the benefits, and then they come back and go, actually, what he done in there actually worked. I didn't think it was going to work either. And that's what started to happen then. Staff who are in there, who are empathetic towards my plight in some ways, and seeing me like willing to fail and come back and say, you know, and make mistakes, sort of out of, some of them out of pure empathy and compassion, sort of thought, actually we'll help them and see what happens. Absolutely. And like, you know, like there was like, and this went from management all the way down, like, you know, you'd sit down with people and in fairness to me manager, she said to me, James, the only thing you need to do is bite the side of your mouth sometimes, because sometimes you have a really good point, but because your voice raises when you're trying to, you know, you lose the ground. So can I give you a bit of advice? And I thank her for it, was bite the side of your lips. And she says, because sometimes I'm sitting here pinching my legs, you know what I mean? So like, and that was something that I learned, and I will always be grateful to BYC for, because they taught me that, like, you know, my tone is really important as well. You know, so but there was lots of problems. There was lots of problems that you dealt with, and like emotional problems that you dealt with, and it's very, very difficult to sort of say to another human being, like, you're emotionally blind to that, or you know, you didn't see that, because they actually feel like, you know, if they're triggered as well. So that left me to a place where, like, you know, the processes themselves, they worked, but the only way they'd work was if people sort of came in behind and rolled in behind me. That led me to that sort of part where you talked about. The third part is like, so why is this happening? Like, what's happening that like the staff are so can be so rebellious against restorative practices? Because restorative practices, when you sit down and ask anybody, it sits in with almost everything we do. Like, you know, and like I had incidents in there where I sort of said, like, I love the kids the way I love my own. And I don't mean that in a sense. I mean that I treat them exactly the way I treat my own children, and I have the same respect for them as I would my own children. And I certainly wouldn't, like, I don't put one child over another child in my own family. So I certainly wouldn't do it. I'd never have favourites when in the club. But a lot of the youth workers would sort of say to you, well, you know, you always get a favourite. And I'd say, no, you don't. They're all the same. And even the most difficult ones are here to challenge us. And the most difficult ones are probably the ones that we have to really, really care for more, because they're probably struggling more than we are. And that's something I learned quite early, you know what I mean? On the journey of restorative practices. So there was this sort of look and sort of say, like, okay, so how do we sort of get the staff to understand this is more than like youth work that we're doing here. This is sort of a little bit more than like we have a responsibility. And one thing that was really prevalent throughout the whole thing when we were doing and everything that we were doing was from a managerial perspective and things going wrong and all that, like there was a huge argument within the management team about making people accountable, like people not turning up, going, locking doors, all this type of stuff. This was all going on through the whole process. And every time something went wrong, it was sort of all put, we restoratively have the conversation about that and, you know, and approach it in a non-restorative way. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like trying to explain to the staff, and I take responsibility for this. Like some of the times I fell into that sort of like shame and blame. You know what I mean? And it was sort of like, you know, you're sort of balancing between what the needs of the management is and what the needs of the staff are against what the needs of the children are. And this can be quite sort of like, so how do we get around this? And like some of the times that we were there initially early, especially in the early days, was a lot of toxicity in the organisation. You know, there's a lot of mistrust between like everybody like, right across the board, you know what I mean? And so like you're sort of walking in that space, and when you're in it every day, it can be, you know, it can be quite overwhelming. And like I suppose in some senses, like I was struggling around taking sides or not taking sides, trying to be friendly with everybody, and you know, trying to be restorative with everybody constantly. And you get quite worn down when you're working with someone who's not being restorative or utilising and they're using restorativeness against you and sort of, you know, so it was quite tough on me at times, you know what I mean? And so like, I was sort of thinking then, like, so how do I address this? How do I look at this? Like, what do I need to do? And one thing I noticed was that the staff themselves were being triggered. Every time I went down, like I'd get triggered sometimes, the staff would get triggered sometimes, management were getting triggered on a constant basis. It was happening all the time. And I spoke to a friend of mine, she's a colleague of mine, that restorative practitioner, Susan Kavanagh, and I said, I was having a conversation with her, and she's saying to me, we need to meet people where they're at. And I said, well, look, can we design something through a restorative lens, an informal trauma training through a restorative lens? And I knew myself that, like, when I was doing it, that I'd have to lead a lot of this stuff itself. So when stuff came up that was really, really personal, that I'd have to share my personal side of things, because I had to sort of model it myself. So I strategically sort of, because I looked at the programme that she'd put in, and I sort of had a look around and sort of thought, okay, this is what's coming down the road. So I'm going to have to sort of reveal a lot of my past and stuff that, like, you know, that I didn't really want to reveal, but I knew that would help open the doors for the rest of the staff in there. So I done that. And majority of the staff turned up for it. Some staff didn't turn up for it, and some staff missed days and all that. And I knew it wasn't because, like, it was because they were being affected by it. And that was, to me, that was growth. You know what I mean? To me, that was growth. So we done the courses, we done it, and I haven't had an opportunity again. I haven't seen what the evaluations, and it was none of my business what the evaluations were, but I'd liking to see the results of what Suzanne actually, our full evaluation. I never got a chance to read that. But what happened after that was transformational. Absolutely transformational, like, because during the sessions, I could see staff members going, oh, Jesus Christ, that's me. You know, and then coming across and having a conversation, actually I do that, and I didn't understand what's that about, I didn't understand what attachment theory was, all this other stuff. So that's how the kids are feeling, you know. And it was amazing, like, and the staff who got done the whole course, you could see them sort of, it was like light bulb moments every second week or every week, it was light bulb moments. And it was done in such a way, it was all experiential, because Susan brought in different things, and we done play work, we done all different types of work. And it was really, really good. And I think everybody who'd done the whole course really enjoyed it. But the ones who really got it, you could see it in play in the organisation, because I've seen an incident there where a young person done something, triggered one of our staff members. I could see our staff member ready to go and then take a deep breath and just go, would someone cover me, and walk out of the room, and I followed her. I went into the kitchen with her and she's gone, I'm after getting triggered. And I said, yeah, okay. She said, no, I'm not. And I said, well, do you want a cup of tea? She said, no, I'm grand. I just need to breathe now, she said. I said, do you want to go down to the room and take a couple of minutes? She said, no, please leave me alone for a couple of minutes, James, and I'll be okay. So I said, grand, and I walked out. And after about 5 or 6 minutes, she came back out and she walked back into the room and she had a little conversation with the young man. The young man didn't realise she'd done absolutely nothing wrong, and he had a conversation. And afterwards, your worker said to me, do you know something? That's the best thing that's ever happened to me. So for me, that was, you know, that's restorative practice working at its max, because what we were trying to do as an organisation, we were trying to make people accountable. We were trying to make people responsible. And we drove like wedges, and our management team got into places where we started to try and do that with staff. And what I discovered really, really quickly was you can't make people responsible. You can't make people accountable. That has to come from themselves, and it has to be an experience that they experience in order to take accountability. And that's what started happening just before I left, was some staff members were seeing their positions, understanding what was happening for them, and taking accountability. And in that particular case, that was the first time that that person actually took accountability for her being triggered, not the young person triggering her, which was what we wanted. So that for me was a real plus, oh God, that's a real good learning there, you know what I mean? I have to say, like, you know, if I'm really honest, I think the staff, the majority, the huge majority of the staff in BYC sort of took to restorative practice. I think in the end, I think initially they'd have been a bit sceptical. They'd have been a bit resistant because it meant that they had to do more. But I think once they start seeing that the processes that we were using were working, especially for the young people, maybe not as much for them because, you know, as I said, they had the extra writing and all that stuff. And even though we added time into their timetable and all to allow them for it, they were still a bit resentful for it. But when they start seeing that the young people were actually benefiting from it, the majority of the staff there sort of thought, look, actually, what's this about? Is this actually working? And that's how I could find champions within it. You know what I mean? I think it's in safe hands. I really do. I think it's in safe hands. I mean, I think, you know, do they need someone to go in on a regular basis? Maybe on to just go in and check and see how things are going. And do they need to start to develop new programs for the young people, like experiential programs and games and all that? Absolutely. My vision for the BYC was a full inclusive one, but one where we all started to understand our responsibilities within the community that we lived in the society in itself, and to work in such a way that let young people understand that life can be difficult, but it's, if you actually work with each other and you sort of play with each other and support each other, then life is going to be that little bit easier for you. It's not going to solve all your issues, but if there's a problem between the two of you, rather than hating each other and sort of fighting, that you can sit down and sort of have a meaningful conversation where you take your part in what's happened, then you can actually resolve these things. And if we work with young people from that age, 7 years of age, and bring them through, then there's a strong possibility, a really, really strong possibility, that what we're doing is we're building a society that civically minded young people. Because it's really important if that's what we want to do, you know what I mean? It is important for the young people, because the young people, this is what this restorative hub is about. It's not about making life easier for staff. That comes with being restorative. It's about sort of giving a space for the young people to actually feel like I'm safe here, or my voice is heard here, and I have a say in what happens here, because this is our club. And I just want to, at the end, I just want to thank BYC for giving me the opportunity to, because it's been sort of something that I've aspired to do for a long, long time, to sort of try and change the mindsets of young people and help them to sort of make better decisions in their life. And BYC gave me the opportunity, so I just want to thank them for that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, and stay tuned for our next episodes.